Carla, are you ready?
Yes.
Carla, am I on? We're permanently on?
You're on.
Thank you, Charles.
All right. We are back in session. Carla, please read the next item.
Item 482, strengthen transparency and accountability of city advisory bodies.
Very good. And before I turn this over to Commissioner Fish, I just want to give notice. I'm afraid I will have to leave at 3:15, so I'll be turning the gavel over to the council president.
We should be done by then.
Probably.
Yeah.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to bring this resolution forward today, which is co-sponsored by Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fritz. I'll provide a few opening comments and then invite my colleagues to do the same. Local government works best when we consult with the community we serve in a substantive and thoughtful way. That relationship must be based on mutual trust, mutual respect, and shared expectations. Despite our best efforts, we know that we don't always get it right. In the fall, we plan to return to council with a package of reforms designed to increase the transparency and accountability of city advisory bodies. Our goal is to standardize policies and procedures where appropriate and to increase clarity for all involved, staff, community members, and decision makers. I became interested in this issue after learning that we did not formally require disclosures of conflicts of interest as a condition of community members serving on advisory bodies. I want to acknowledge Alan Klassen at the Northwest Examiner for his reporting on this issue, and our ombudsman, Margie Solinger, who's here today, and we'll hear from her, for her investigatory work, and others who helped us to identify what I consider to be a significant loophole. A little history. We held a work session on April 4th to frame the issues and to solicit council and community feedback. Today's resolution does three things. It directs bureaus to furnish information and documents to the city attorney to create the inventory. Second, it directs the city attorney to work with the sponsors of this resolution, the Office of the Neighborhood Involvement, the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and others to develop policy recommendations over the summer. And finally, we anticipate that in the fall, we will return to council with a set of proposed reforms. I want to take a moment at the outset, Mayor, to recognize and acknowledge Judy Prosper of the City Attorney's Office. Judy has been the driving force behind this work, and it is our loss that she's unable to be with us today. Judy, if in the unlikely event you're at home watching us on TV, we're thinking of you, and we are sending good wishes for a speedy recovery. Today we have City Attorney Tracy Reeve to briefly walk us through the proposal, and then we have a panel that will invite up Mayor to offer some comments, and then we'll take testimony.
Very good.
I'll turn it over to my colleagues if they have any opening comments.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really happy to partner with both Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fish on this issue. I was on the Planning Commission for 7 years before I was elected to office, so it's obviously something that gave me a lot of experience and in some ways experience of how things were not done particularly well. So from my first term when I was in charge of the Office of Neighbourhood Involvement, I was very interested in the issue of boards and commissions and encouraging more people to be involved and helping people be successful when they are involved. We started looking at the demographics of our boards and commissions, over 400 of them that Brian Hoop in the Office of Neighbourhood Involvement compiled a list of their demographics in order to select a charter commission in 2011 that was broadly representative of the city as a whole. And it kind of the amount of effort that Brian had to put in to get that information was another warning sign that we needed to do something differently. I was not assigned to the Office of Neighbourhood Involvement when Mayor Hales was first in office, so I'm very happy to be now coming back into it from a different perspective. And as the title says, this work, which has been led by Commissioner Fish for over a year, is about strengthening accountability and transparency. The work that I hope to do and plan to do in a companion resolution is about accessibility and inclusion, and how can we welcome and prepare everyone in our community, especially those who have not been involved before, in being on boards and commissions, because that not only is a good service to the city, it can provide an opportunity to then run for office or any number of other options that experience can give a person. So the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program in the Office of Neighbourhood Involvement has been training folks in leadership in six different communities for many years. We don't necessarily loop those trained, eager, especially young people and people of colour. We don't have a formal way to encourage them to know what kinds of openings might be available and how to get on those boards and commissions. So it's a companion policy that I'm hoping to bring back either at the same time or right after when you do yours. So thank you very much for letting me be involved.
Thank you both. It's been a pleasure learning about this and working on it with you. I think this resolution and the work that comes out of it will hopefully strengthen the public's support, interest, belief in these committees. It will ensure that that conflict of interest issue is a particular concern to me, and ensure that we're also valuing the time that the community members are putting into these boards and commissions. So,
thank you both for your partnership, and it's an honor to work with you on this important matter. And we're going to turn now to the city attorney who's pitching in for another city attorney. And I want to be clear, Mayor and colleagues, Tracy Reeve is going to walk us through the specifics of the resolution. The resolution does not set the policy. The resolution directs the bureaus and other city staff to forward information and documents to a central repository from which we can evaluate those documents and information and come back in the fall with recommendations. So we are not deciding policy today, but we are foreshadowing the areas of interest in terms of addressing, and there will be a significant opportunity for public involvement as we shape the policy going forward. So, Tracy, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. And members of council, I'm Tracy Reeve. I'm the Portland City Attorney. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And as Commissioner Fish said, I'm pinch hitting for Deputy City Attorney Judy Prosper of my office, who's out with an illness, but will be back at work and back at this as soon as she can. So in my office, and Judy in particular, although other attorneys as well, have been trying to act as a resource for various boards and commissions and members of boards and commissions and community members who have questions about which rules apply to advisory body participation, how to navigate the laws and policies that guide their service, how to run the public meetings that many of these bodies have. And that has at times been challenging for the members of the boards and commissions, for the various staff that staff the boards and commissions, and frankly for some of my attorneys, and including Judy, who has done a lot of that work. That experience has shown us that additional clarity about roles and expectations of advisory bodies would benefit everyone, the staff, the members who serve, and the decision makers that they advise. We've also seen that the lack of comprehensive current information about how we as a city are engaging people in our community on policy questions, and we don't have a kind of a systematic approach to that across the city. The resolution before you today directs staff to work over the summer to put together a package of deliverables that will come back before you in the fall for your final consideration. And specifically, the resolution directs the following: the creation of an inventory to provide a comprehensive database of the advisory bodies and the people who serve on them, including basic information about the body's function, when it was created, what the purpose of the body is, the number of positions, whether it has existing bylaws, and hopefully what those are, and if available, demographic information about the members. And this is important because, and we had actually tried to start doing some of this work with a paralegal in my office, and we realized that there is just not a comprehensive source, and as Commissioner Fritz mentioned, others have tried to pull it together, and it'll be really beneficial for us as a city, I think, to have that information in one place. We're going to develop a uniform application form to bring forward for your consideration that could be implemented as a standard practice. And I want to note that this would be intended to be a floor and not a ceiling. It would be a tool that could be tailored with additional questions that could be added for an individual board or commission to make sure that it was getting the members and the community participants that are most appropriate for that board or commission. So there would be flexibility.
On that issue, may I just interrupt? Will it be starting from the form that's already in use, or will you be developing a new one from scratch?
Well, I would say we would certainly be looking at the form that's still in use, and I am not, and I apologize because I am stepping in for Judy, who's been much more involved in the details of this, so I'm not sure if there's been a decision as to whether to adapt that form or to start with a new form. I just haven't been involved at that level.
I will ask any more questions. Thank
okay.
you.
Another area of direction that this resolution provides is for us to develop training materials to help city staff effectively facilitate advisory bodies. As all of you know, it can be challenging to run public meetings. We're often asking these advisory bodies to do that, and we're asking staff to staff them as they're doing that. We need to train both the staff and the advisory body members. Excuse me. And then training materials to help the community members who will serve on these bodies, both to help with their knowledge of process and procedure, but also importantly to make them aware of the legal obligations that they're taking on by serving on one of these bodies. They're subject to conflict of interest requirements in many cases. They may be public officials under various legal standards, and they need to be aware of that and what that entails. Many of these bodies are public bodies, not all are, but that brings with it legal obligations in terms of quorum requirements and public meetings. And almost all of the folks who serve on these boards and commissions are creating public records in the course of their work, and they need to be advised on how to manage that. And it's really, we came to the conclusion that it's really just not fair to put people on as advisory board members that aren't provided this kind of training so that they really have a good sense of what these legal obligations may be.
Tracy, if I could just add, because you just you stated the challenge and the question very succinctly. Our goal is not to scare people off from serving in these positions. Our goal is to make sure they understand exactly what they are being asked to do and what the legal requirements of the position are. And we don't want to have a situation in the future where someone is performing an important function at the request of the city only to find out after the fact that they were a public official, that their emails are subject to public records, and that they may have deviated from good practice in how they run a meeting. That's not fair to people that we're asking to serve, and we owe it to them that we give them all that information and training before we ask them to serve.
Absolutely. We will also, if you pass this resolution, come back to you with a recommendation about how to track that trainings have occurred so that we can make sure not only that each board and commission has been trained, but, for example, as new members come on, that they're likewise receiving the training. We will develop a template for standard bylaws. One thing we know is that they're all over the board. And so if we have a template for standard bylaws, again, it may well be that individual boards or commissions would want to modify those in certain ways to suit their needs. But there may be some items that council decides should be across the board. And if nothing else, we can give a template that they can start from. We will develop develop for your consideration a survey that we'll ask members to complete at the end of their service so we can get some information about how our community members are finding their experience serving on boards and commissions, where the areas of frustration are, where we can provide more support as a city to those who are doing this important work on our behalf. And we will also at least get started for your consideration on a proposed set of values to help us be thoughtful as we select people for service and put these bodies together. We want to be mindful of all of the city's values that have already been articulated around diversity, equity, ensuring that we're getting robust participation from a variety of folks on these issues, and what is that? What are those guiding values that we want to have that guide that selection process across the different boards and commissions? When we come back to you with these updates, we'll also propose a lead office for this work and a budget for implementation. And so it's our intention that any budget request will be before you in time for your consideration as part of the fall bump process.
May I just ask, I'll ask my colleague on here the question on that. Since much of the work might be assigned to the Office of Neighbourhood Involvement, does even the collecting of the data and the compiling of it create a workload issue for ONI? And maybe you don't need to answer that right now.
I'm looking at Brian now.
I'm concerned that there's a lot of work here, and that I know you already have a work plan, and so that's something to keep in mind.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so far, concern has not been expressed, but
we can talk more about that
yes.
later. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, and my office is going to be doing a fair amount of the work as well, and we will be dedicating both Judy and other attorneys' time, and we will also have some staff support available to help do some of this work
that's very
as well.
Helpful. Thank you.
In fact, this work will be done by a combination of my staff from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, staff from the Office of Management and Finance, and in consultation with the Office of Equity and Human Rights. It's our expectation that representatives of the Public Involvement Advisory Committee, housed in ONI, will also participate in these conversations, and they have some really good guidance and experience in this area to share. And finally, we expect to continue engaging with the sponsors' offices and, frankly, all of your offices as we develop these updates for your consideration in the fall.
Tracy, thank you very much, and you did a superb job pinch hitting for Judy and on short notice. One other thing. So, Mayor, in case you do have to leave us before this is over, what we will be asking you if this passes today is to send out a directive to the bureaus within the next week, directing them to follow the time limits and the requirements of the resolution. We have set an aggressive timeline on this matter because we want to keep this on track. Commissioner Fritz, though, raises a very important question. If it turns out in the course of collecting documents and information that people feel that it's an unreasonably short time frame, then we can make some adjustments. We are trying to keep this on track for something to come back this fall, but that is a flexible timeline if we run into some problems. And the other thing that I want to preview that's not in the resolution is that we have a habit as a council of appointing boards and commissions on an ad hoc basis with great frequency. And it's something we do. And interestingly, even though it is an incredibly important task and delegation, we have no formal structure for determining what is the appropriate kind of board or commission or what their charge should be. And so I will be proposing as part of this that we add to the filing documents that go into the record before you, that anybody proposing to create a new board or commission has checked with the city's attorney's office, has reviewed the applicable legal issues, and that we're confident that what is being proposed is the right match for the task. And that, I think, just will systematize the work of keeping legal counsel in the loop so we get their advice. And if there's a disagreement, then we have a chance to air that disagreement. So with that, thank you, Tracy. I'm going to invite our invited guests forward. First is Debbie Iona from the League of Women Voters. I will note that in the stationery of the letter we received from her, it lists Doreen Binder as the co-president. We understand the Senate has launched an investigation into so-called voting irregularities in the last election. City Ombudsman Margie Solinger. And Margie, I apologize for constantly mispronouncing your name.
That's okay.
Particularly given that you are our ombudsman. And Francesca Patriciolo. Am I close?
Patriciolo.
Well, yeah, that's even better. Thank you. Who is both a member of the PIAC and represents the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Thank you all very much for being here. Debbie, we'll start with you, okay. And I'll acknowledge that part of the record is the letter we received dated May 10th, 2017 from the League of Women Voters that sets forth your position formally.
So I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League supports efforts to build more transparency and accountability into the city's boards and commissions. The process described in the resolution calls for the city attorney to work with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Office of Equity and Human Rights, and Office of Management and Finance to develop written materials that will be provided to city advisory bodies. The League urges Council to instruct the City Attorney, and it sounds like they're headed in that direction, to also consult with the Public Involvement Advisory Council and the Human Rights Commission during the policy development phase, and to include the public in the discussions related to these new policies. In the last several years, we have become increasingly concerned that policies of importance to the community are developed without involving advisory bodies at open meetings. Tapping into the expertise of these two groups and the public at large is an essential step that should not be overlooked. Over the years, League members have attended numerous advisory group meetings. In our experience, one size does not fit all when it comes to governing procedures, training needs, staffing, selection process, and terms of service, including whether or not term limits are imposed on members. Therefore, we want to emphasize that, where appropriate, the materials produced by the City Attorney should include guidelines or recommendations, but not requirements, as what I heard the City Attorney just say. We oppose the universal imposition of term limits. Each board and commission is unique, and the specifics applicable to that body should be included in code or in bylaws and protocols. For example, as long-term observers of the Independent Police Review's Citizen Review Committee, we have come to appreciate the importance of experience and institutional knowledge in this advisory body because of the complexity of the oversight system and the time it takes to understand police bureau policies. Term limits would be a barrier to CRC's effectiveness. Their recruitment process allows the selection panel to consider the current makeup of the committee, and if experienced members are in short supply, it can renew a member's term without limits. The League recommends a full public discussion of disclosure and recusal rules. State law allows individuals with actual or potential conflicts serving on advisory bodies to participate in committee decisions as long as their conflicts are disclosed. The most current version of the resolution implies that a potential change of that practice by calling for recusal when appropriate. If the city is contemplating adopting a higher standard than that required by state law, the public should be involved in a full consideration of the trade-offs. The pros and cons of requiring recusal should be discussed with PIAC, the Human Rights Commission, and the public before a final decision is made on this issue. In conclusion, the PIAC, Human Rights Commission, and the public must be involved in developing the materials cited in the resolution. Those materials should be written in a way that allows advisory bodies to tailor their procedures, membership, training, and terms of service to fit their function and responsibilities. Thank you.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
Is 20 years too long to serve on a committee?
Well, and I just want to make the point again with the CRC. The way they do it is you get a three-year term. You have to apply at the end of that three-year term. It's up to the selection committee to, and I've actually seen them not have somebody come back because they look at the makeup of the board, the applicants, and they kind of balance all the factors, diversity, length of service, all of those things, and decide whether or not to renew that person's term. And I think I don't mean for every board and commission that's the right thing to do. I think for one that is as complicated as the job that the CRC does, I think it's important for the selection committee to be able to balance all those factors. And just one more thing. I have noticed when there is like a large turnover, which happens from time to time, it's as if they're in neutral for like a year. It takes that long. It feels like for people to really finally feel like they have their feet on the ground and they're ready to really start functioning in a way that's effective. So that's kind of how I struggle with this.
Still, is 20 years too long? And if you've got the majority of the committee who have served for 20 years and they're responsible for selecting themselves?
No, they're not. They have the selection committee. That's a key to this. You have to have a selection committee with different perspectives so that they're not just trying to keep their friends around. So one, I think it's one former CRC member, the auditor, someone from the auditor's office or IPR, a community member. So there are some different people with different priorities who sit on the selection panel. So it's not as if the current CRC members are deciding whether or not you know, people get to stay around forever.
So it would depend on the Board of Commission, because some of them really, like the Human Rights Commission, is responsible for nominating its own.
Yeah, so it depends on your rules. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's important is who's on the selection committee and what your process is.
That's very helpful clarification. Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Mambotsu.
Good afternoon. I'm Margie Solinger, two soft G's for the record. I'm the ombudsman for the City of Portland. Thank you to the...
Is the green light on there in front of you?
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for having me here. I was involved in just a small slice of this issue, and the baton has long since been passed, but I think what I can offer today is some context for why this resolution is important. About 2 years ago now, I received a complaint from a group of community members who believed that multiple members of the West Quadrant Stakeholder Advisory Committee had undisclosed financial conflicts of interest. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability created this particular committee to help guide staff in recommending a plan for the long-term development of the western half of Portland Central City. The Bureau wanted to empanel a portion of members who could bring subject matter expertise from fields like property development, finance, and architecture. And having subject matter experts serve on these sorts of committees makes a lot of sense. It can be incredibly beneficial to the city, but at the same time, outside experts often bring with them affiliations and professional interests that may be at odds with obligations they assume while serving as public officials. For the public to have confidence in the outcome, there need to be safeguards in place to protect the integrity of, of the decision-making process. In looking into this community group's complaint, I found out that some of the committee members had not none of the committee members had been pre-screened for conflicts of interest during the selection phase. Once appointed, they had not been informed of or trained on their obligations as public officials. And during committee discussions, members were not disclosing any potential conflicts of interest. Disclosure of conflicts of interest is an important mechanism for managing conflicts where they can't be avoided in the first instance and where recusal is not required. Disclosure allows other committee members, the public, and downstream decision makers like council to take into account or to discount the input of a committee member who acknowledges that they or a relative or a business that they're associated with could benefit financially from their recommended course of action. What I also found out during the investigation is that the scenario that played out with the West Quadrant Committee was not unique to that committee or to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Rather, the city as a whole had a much more widespread institutional shortcoming when it came to recognizing and acting upon its responsibility to ensure conformance with the state ethics law. As a result of the West Quadrant case, as you've heard, the city attorney's office developed a training to make sure that committee's members are aware of their ethical obligations to disclose conflicts of interest. And this was a necessary first step. The city has a clear interest in volunteers complying with state ethics law. But the proposal before you today at least proposes to go further than the minimum requirements. State law places the burden currently on volunteers to understand their obligations and comply with them. With this proposal, the city is at least foreshadowing taking greater ownership and making sure there is an ethical decision-making process that inspires public confidence. This is an example of Portland setting a higher standard for itself, and I commend Commissioners Fish, Udaly, and Fritz for taking the lead. Commissioner Fish, in particular, deserves credit for transforming a host of community concerns into a concrete and responsive policy proposal. The proposed reforms honor the hard work and input of the volunteers who serve, putting in place safeguards that ensure that public service remains a public trust. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Margie. Francesca, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I'm Francesca Patricolo. I'm a planner and public involvement specialist with the Bureau of Transportation and a member of the Public Involvement Advisory Council. The Public Involvement Advisory Council, PIAC for short, is excited to work alongside staff from Commissioners Fish, Udaly, and Fritz's offices, the Office of the City Attorney, Office of Management and Finance, and Office of Equity and Human Rights in order to strengthen the transparency and accountability of city advisory bodies. PIAC was created by City Council in 2008 to increase the consistency and effectiveness of public involvement in city government decision-making. PIAC is citywide in scope and advisory to City Council and bureaus. What makes it unique is that the members are a balance of community members and city bureau staff. PIAC reviews current city practices around public involvement in government decision-making, proposes new policies and guidelines, and creates tools and resources to help city staff engage in Portland's diverse communities in meaningful ways. We appreciate reference to the City Council adopted public involvement principles, which were crafted by PIAC in 2010. We agree Portland city government works best when community members and government work as partners. Advisory committees are a fundamental component towards successful implementation of these principles. PIAC has a work group examining boards and commissions, which we see as complementary to the efforts initiated by Commissioners Fish, Udaly, and the Attorney's Office. Based on our preliminary examination in the past year, PIAC's work group has organized our emerging recommendations into five categories, several of which complement the themes in the resolution. And those are managing advisory committees, providing clearer guidance on roles, responsibilities, and authority in the many advisory committees, how we might better coordinate administration of such committees citywide, and improving the ability of volunteer members to effectively participate. Recruiting and retaining diverse membership. Considering best practices to help bureaus more successfully recruit members, better reflecting the changing demographics of the city, and creating more welcoming and supportive environments to improve the recruitment, and more importantly, retention of community volunteers. In the sense that, not that they're serving for 20 years, but to create a welcoming environment for those who are serving so that they don't want to quit. They enjoy serving their duration. Public engagement, developing tools and best practices to improve the ability of the public to find information about and participate in advisory committees, as well as looking outside the box for alternative strategies for expanding community input into city decision-making processes. Is my bike being really weird? No. Okay. I'm good. Oh, okay. Thanks. Training and legal issues, mostly mirroring issues brought up by the city attorney's office, but also looking for citywide best practices to help orient committee members on how to be effective participants and assist city staff to better understand their roles and responsibilities for building effective committees and evaluating effectiveness, considering citywide practices for surveying and evaluating effectiveness of bodies of advisory committees. Are they making a positive difference? And how we might continually learn from and propose system improvements. The last bullet point of the resolution before you is about developing values to guide transparent selection processes. As a member of the PIAC work group examining our boards and commissions, I see a role for us to support this work by developing guides to instruct bureau staff on best practice recruitment and selection of membership processes and strategies for starting up a successful new group and maintaining an effective and inclusive advisory body. PIAC would also welcome the opportunity to review the draft products and recommendations that result from the efforts outlined in this resolution. We could offer feedback from diverse community and city public involvement staff perspectives that may prove as a helpful sounding board. The need for this work is large. It has been a long time coming, and we want to thank you for taking this initiative to act on moving this good work forward inclusively.
Can I just thank you for your very thoughtful testimony, and I want to make a commitment here since it was raised in the League's letter, and you have referenced a work group that is doing a parallel function, although the scope of your work group includes what Commissioner Fritz has foreshadowed around a subsequent resolution or ordinance around how we get a more representative body of citizens to serve on panels. And, of course, PIAC is also interested in meaningful public engagement and ways of facilitating that. But I will make a commitment to you in this proceeding that we will meet with the work group in the development of a proposal, and we will also review any proposal with you prior to coming to council, so we solicit your feedback.
Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Well, I thank you for your time and service. Thank you, ladies. Mayor, that is our formal presentation.
Good presentation. Thank you. I assume we have some public testimony?
Yes. I believe we have like 7 people signed up.
Very good.
The first 3, please come on up, are Joe Walsh, Star Stauffer.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine, sir.
So it'll be Sarah Hobbs, Star Stauffer, and Joe Walsh.
Very good. Do you want to start, Sarah?
For the record, my name is Sarah Hobbs, and I've got to tell you my experience in 2012 or 13 sitting on the Cocal Selection Committee so turned me off to the committee process here in the city. I will never again volunteer for another city committee. It was 2013. I am surprised 4 years later you're just now looking at addressing a lot of the issues that have turned me off to serving as a city citizen resident of Portland. I guess better late than never, but there is a very long history here. You all know me. If I am this adamant that I will never do it again, it had to be bad. I have never in a city process showing up here since 2009 and took various issues felt so badly burned. And on that note, I do have some concern. It's a proclamation. How long is this going to take? Do we have time limits on how long the process to come up with the process is going to take? I got burnt 4 years ago. How much longer is this going to be allowed to go on? Thank you.
And Sarah, can I just respond to the one question you posed to us, because it's a fair question? There are aggressive timelines in the resolution that depend on the Bureau's furnishing information to the City Attorney's Office, and there is a directive to come back to Council within 150 days with a proposed ordinance.
So that's 4.5 months, 5 months?
September.
Okay.
The goal is to come back in September with a finished product.
Okay. You're on record. I'm holding you accountable.
Well, the resolution also says that.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. Our big concern is that we look at the 5 of you who are not really interested, with the exception of Commissioner Udaly, that I don't really know yet. But the other 4 of you, I don't think you're really interested in transparency. That's a problem. You get a D and an F when outside agencies look at your transparency, and now you want to create something that's going to make it better. Our suggestion would be that the auditor be involved in this. The auditor's office is an office that the community respects. Really does. We looked at that office, and we're pleased with a lot of their decisions. Not all of them. We fight with them. We argue with them. But they have credibility with us, and they're not at the table. The city attorney works for you, Mayor. The auditor does not. You have a lot of control. You might lose a little bit if the vote goes the way it should go, in our opinion. But that's our concern. Somebody, a good friend who is sitting to my left, whispered in my ear, you know, it's kind of amazing that we have 5 white people up there talking about equity and justice and equal and equality and compassion and stuff like that. It's a problem. And I think you realize it, that you are sitting representing a city that is becoming more and more diverse. This council is not. Exception again, Commissioner Udaly. I'm glad you're here. 2 women does my heart goodness, even when I fight with you I like seeing two women on there. I would like to see a minority on this council. You have no credibility. You have to earn that back. The auditor's office does. Now, I realize this is kind of the first step, and that's a good point there, Commissioner Fish, that you're going to bring it back, and you're going to tweak it, and you're going to screw around with it. One of the things to consider is something that Sarah said, I think, or implied. You don't want to drive the people away from these commissions and committees. They're volunteers. They're not getting paid. That means they get up that day and say, I want to do this. If you keep screwing with this stuff and you do not have the ability to do it, find somebody else that does. If you screw with it too much, you will run them out. And that will be sad, because we'll be right back where we started again. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Star Stoffer, you guys all know me. I have a few concerns about this proposal. Number one, Joe is absolutely right. I did say that. I have concerns when I see a group of white people come up here, all white people, and talk about how they aren't really sure how to reach out to the community and get them involved, and how come people don't feel welcome to join the community, and there's a lack of diversity. Well, I mean, you're all white. Duh. In this city in specific, I can't talk nationwide, but in this city in specific right now, why would any person of color feel safe to approach to try to be on a committee where their voice is most likely going to be drowned out by all the white voices they're surrounded by? And that word diversity is a liberal racist term. Who gets to decide what's diverse, and who decides what to include other people? Who's deciding to be inclusive, and what gave them the right to be the includers? Number two, I have an issue with the Office of Management and Finance weighing in on this, considering they're not transparent themselves. Only recently, due to you slashing the budget for houseless and cutting 1,000 beds, did we really learn of their involvement in regards to those issues. We have yet, after repeated requests, been able to receive protocol on how they make their decisions and directions in regards to sweeps. That's a lack of transparency. We cannot get a call back, an email back, and we have yet to see a face or a protocol. This council shows a lack of transparency left and right. The fact that you went behind the city's back and slashed that budget and cut 1,000 beds, you did not do that openly. Even your assistant couldn't look us in the eyes when she knew that decision was going to be made. Don't interrupt me, please. I'm not finished, actually.
Okay. Trying to get to the bottom.
If you wanted to get to the bottom of that, you would have been open about it from the get-go. But you weren't. We were blocked left and right. We have been here week after week after week approaching you on these issues of, quote, diversity and houseless issues. And we have been met with roadblocks left and right. You say it's the county's fault. The county says it's your fault. You made a decision based on a draft, a very crappy draft, written by the Joint Office of Houseless Services. And you made a decision in regards to houseless that is going to put 1,000 more lives in jeopardy next year. And you did that without discussing it with us first, even though we had gone over that revision. That is a lack of transparency. And now you're advising other people and boards on how to be more transparent when you yourselves show a consistent lack of transparency. And that lack of transparency is endangering lives in this city. You have 9 deaths under you so far. 9. And nobody in the city knows why. That's a lack of transparency.
Thank you for your time. Just for the record, the city's budget has not been adopted. All of it is in public tonight. If people would like to participate in an open budget forum, there is our third community forum today. The proposed budget is available online, line item by line item by line item, and you can actually see within each line item the complete narrative for the line item. The City Council has not yet adopted that budget. And I will just say, I factually dispute that there is any proposal to reduce funding for 1,000 beds or any number of beds in the community.
Mayor, we have two more.
Is
people.
There any public more public testimony?
One sec, please. Mayor, we have two more, and then could you stay for a vote?
Number. Yeah, of course.
So, Carla, call the last two.
The last two
Thank
are
you.
Charles Bridgetrain Johnson and Mark Wobald. And unless there was a Charles Morton, I think he signed up on the wrong sheet.
You have to go. Right?
You have to go.
That's right. Y'all hear me loud. Just let the gentleman go first.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to address you. My name is Mark Wobald. I'm a citizen of Northeast Portland, and I'm here to talk about, I'm also currently serving on PIAC, and I was formerly serving on the Arts Tax Oversight Commission as one of the founding group, and really enjoyed that work and really enjoyed the work with PIAC. The reason I wanted to address you today is that recently I was appointed by the governor to serve on the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission. And so in the last couple of years, I've gone through both the local process for being vetted for the boards and commissions, as well as the state process. And I just wanted to inform you that the state has a wonderful online training program. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it is broken up into six modules. The first is an overview of Oregon state government, which is an excellent civics lesson for anybody who's interested. Its second module is concerned with an overview of boards, commissions, and small entities. It covers templates for bylaws. I know that's a concern of the resolution. The third is general activities of boards, commissions, and small... I'm sorry, I just said that. The fourth is operations and management of boards, commissions, and small entities. The fifth has to do with diversity and inclusion. And the sixth module has to do with conflict of interest, which I know is a primary concern of yours as well. So the reason I'm here today is I would encourage you to take a look at that training's piece and consider that for your boards and commissions. The nice thing about it is I also am aware that you're considering digital engagement and the possibility of making some investments there. If that's the case, this is the perfect pilot for that kind of an investment. When I was asked by the governor to serve, they took all kinds of important information. They identified my conflict of interest. They had me sign off on a variety of legal issues. And so at the end of the day, they can tell you who I am, where I reside, what board and commission I serve on, when I'm going to term out, and a bunch of other logistical issues that I know you're going to grapple with if you're going to do a database. My primary concern is that with the database, you have a one-off that may not over time serve you, and that we may find ourselves back here again in 3 months or 6 months or 3 years or 6 years doing this again, trying to identify who all of those folks are and where they've gone and who they're serving and how long they've been serving. So having been through those two processes, I can just tell you that the state has an excellent tool for this, and that if they're amenable to collaborating with the city, perhaps there's a way to share the investment, that would be an excellent resource for boards and commissions.
Mark, first of all, thank you very much for taking the time to testify. Thank you for your service on the Arts Tax Oversight Committee. The city attorney that is joining us today is the lawyer that argued the sixth and final appeal before the Oregon Supreme Court. So we're hoping to get a decision at some point. And could I ask you, Sonia, can you raise your hand for a second? My chief of staff is sitting in the back. Would you mind sharing with her your current contact information?
I will do that.
And we'd like to follow up with you.
Okay.
I just have a quick question. Are those modules that you said, are they only for people who are appointed or in the running, or are they public? Can anybody view them?
I doubt that they are. Well, they are public, but I was given a password, and so it's an authenticated system, and you have to log on. That's why they're able to capture all of that data and to retain it.
I think what you've raised is extremely helpful, and frankly, it also addresses perhaps the next phase of our work, which is how can we do periodic refreshers? And if we were going to do, say, an annual refresher so that people can get just a reminder about their obligations and checklists of things to worry about, it may be that an online process might be tailor-made for that. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
And if you could just touch base with Sonia for a second. Charles?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And you actually did not get her full name into the thank yous. You didn't say Sonia Szymanski when you were thanking Judy Prosper. I don't think you got the whole name in there. So you must be having a bad day, Commissioner Fish. So the scope I'd like to address equity and involvement first is actually something rather different. And just ask you, Commissioners, to reflect, which high schools do you remember seeing coming in here for any reason? When we're going to start to talk about inclusion and equity, I know today we're sort of more focused on the nuts and bolts, but it seems to me that my 4 years of advocating and agitating here, we're not treating everyone equally. I can think of multiple appearances for closer schools and lesser appearances for more distant schools, and it really shouldn't work out like that because there's a lot of demographic impact there. I think we finally got Jefferson High School down here maybe once in the last 6 months. It's unfortunate that the mayor had to go because one angle I think we need to talk about with these boards and committees is return on investment, in which case we really suck. Why? Because we invested the most money in the COCAL and the COAB, and we starved it to death. Now, that wasn't a unilateral, well, I don't know if that was a unilateral decision of the City Commission Council or not, but hundreds of thousands of dollars went into COABing and COCALing, with just one person's salary, actually, plus the Rosenbaum and Watson. So there probably ought to be an after-action report just on that. That's a kind of unique body because it came from the situation of the United States of America versus the city of Portland for violence and patterns and practices harmful to mentally ill people, or people experiencing mental illness. So that's unfortunate. The other thing that's really sticking in my mind is that there's been almost a hypervigilance or disturbance. When you go to a public meeting of one of those advisory bodies, and the environment is more harsh, less welcoming than the situation we have here, where we've generally tried to be flexible about decorum, and the most important is for citizens to be able to get their ideas out and shared with their neighbors and constructively participate. That was most evidenced with the now defunct COAB, where people felt there was a more regulatory, stricter policy there than we have even in this room. So I hope that after Commissioner Fish has mentioned the Supreme Court and the arts tax, we're still up in the air with what the Ninth Circuit is going to do about Judge Simon's positioning and the procedure in the COCAL co-op settlement. So I hope that Joe gives them mindfulness to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any more public testimony?
That's all who signed up.
Colleagues, any discussion?
Proceed to a vote.
Okay. Take the roll, please.
Fish.
Well, I want to begin by thanking my colleagues, Commissioners Fritz and Udaly, for co-sponsoring this resolution, and I want to thank their terrific staff for their involvement as well. I want to acknowledge two people on my team. First is Jim Blackwood, who I think is home watching this on Channel 30, and I want to thank Jim for all the work that he did to launch this effort. And I want to thank my Chief of Staff, Sonia Szymanski, for picking up the baton and bringing us to this moment. I want to give a tip of the hat to Judy Prosper. Judy is really the person that inspired this work, and she, on a somewhat ad hoc basis, became the person in the city attorney's office who provided guidance to electeds, appointed, and staff. And I think she's the one who first identified a bigger structural problem along with our ombudsman. And I want to just thank her for her public service, and we look forward to having her back. Tracy Reeve, our city attorney, thank you for stepping in and helping us get to this point. I want to thank our partners and our partners in good government, the League of Women Voters, Debbie Iona and Doreen Binder, the new co-president. Congratulations. I want to acknowledge the ombudsman. If the charter changes that are on the ballot pass, I believe she will be permanently placed within the auditor's office, just for the record, and we appreciate her involvement in shaping this proposal. And I also want to thank our friends at the PIAC. And Francesca, thank you for joining us today. And we look forward to working with your work group in both the development of a policy and in the fine-tuning of that policy. So thank you for your time. I'm proud to play a role in bringing this issue to this point. We have a lot of hard work ahead, but I think with all the goodwill and the people at the table, we have a good chance of getting it right. So thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Commissioners Udaly, Fritz, and Fish for bringing this forward. This is good stuff, and look forward to working to bring it to successful fruition. Aye.
Fritz.
I'm very happy that we're doing this work, and thank you for being involved in coming downtown to talk. Thank you to Lindanette Covin, who was here a little earlier. She made the very good point in her written testimony that we shouldn't just be waiting to do exit interviews when people are done with their terms, but we should be checking in annually about how things are going, you know, how do the community members, are there things that they need from us that would make it a more meaningful role for them, and also being very clear about what is the role and the expectations as far as advice versus making decisions, and that can vary widely between different bodies. I also honor Judy Prosper, and I hope she'll be back soon, and Sonia Szymanski, Claire Adamczyk, and Jamie Duhamel in Commissioner Udaly's office. It's some of the strong women in City Hall working together at the staff level as well as at the commissioner level. Thank you to Ashley Horn of the Public Involvement Best Practices Program. She staffs the Public Involvement Advisory Committee and also does pretty much all of the work externally on our equity and inclusion goals. So that was one reason I'm very concerned about whether this effort will have enough staff, and I appreciate the city attorney agreeing that this will be a shared task rather than somebody's dumped on somebody's desk and come back in September. So I know that that's not the case. And in fact, I sense a great sense of enthusiasm for this project throughout City Hall and City Government. It is high time. Yes, perhaps we should have done it before, but we're doing it now. And because we're doing it now, we can do it informed by the experience, in my case, of the past 8 years plus and what we've tried in Office of Equity and Human Rights. The different ways that boards and commissions function can be a very good thing. I will continue to be looking at the issue, should there be any kind of term limits, because I was eligible for another term on the Planning Commission, and Vera Katz decided not to reappoint me, and that did not feel good. It would have felt much better if I'd have just been termed out. And so I think when we're asking our community members to put their best foot forward and to really give them more, sometimes having term limits can be a gracious way of saying, thank you, now it's somebody else's turn. Other times, as Debbie Iona points out, there's that historical memory, that institutional knowledge that does need to carry through. Although in my experience, until the people who are good at something step down, then it's very difficult for other people to get a place at the table, because when you start having 50, 60 people at the table, each one of them has less time for input. So there's that tension which probably will not lend itself easily to rigid rules. Again, Lindanette Covin suggested talking about values and principles as well as perhaps strict limits, because I personally think that 20 years might be a bit long and somebody else could probably take up the baton after that much time. So anyway, thank you very much for the conversation. I've really enjoyed it and look forward to working with everybody on it. Aye.
Udaly.
I want to echo all the thanks of my colleagues and say to Jamie, perhaps we need to start making a thank you list, because I have yet to memorize the names of everyone in this building, and I think every time I talk, I am probably forgetting to thank somebody. So I'm just going to give a whole blanket thank you to everyone in this room and in City Hall, and try to do better moving forward. So I was excited to be involved in this process as someone who's been asked to serve on a variety of boards and committees, and for whom the word stakeholder has become somewhat of a dirty word. and that is due to feeling that my time and experience and expertise hasn't always been valued, and that sometimes people just want to pay lip service to a certain community or cause. So that's where I'm coming from, and I am also, as a outsider and a community member, sometimes disappointed and cynical about who is making the decisions and who is, thank you for the twinkle fingers, who feels welcome enough at the table to get involved. So those are really vital issues to me, and I do think we can, many things have probably gone wrong more by default than by design, but it's time to get really deliberate about how we form these